part is devastating, but Susan Piver, the author of The Hard Questions and How Not to Be Afraid of Your Own Life, reveals in these pages that heartbreak's overwhelming pain also creates an opportunity for genuine spiritual transformation, enabling you to emerge on the other side stronger, softer, and capable of loving even more deeply than before. In the years following her own heartbreak, Susan Piver came to discover the courage and sadness and how it can make all of us more alive. In instantaneously recognizable anecdotes, heart-wrenching and at times comical, from her own life and others, she shows that heartbreak is a rite of passage for everyone, one that can leave you firmly convinced of your personal power and secure in your indestructible ability to love. And like an infinitely patient, trusted friend, she tells you in 1,000 different ways the most important thing to remember and the easiest to forget. You're going to be okay. The wisdom of a broken heart is a practical, steady, and compassionate plan filled with important insights, on-the-spot practices, exercises, meditations, and down-to-earth advice on how to cope with day-to-day miseries, offering a priceless prescription of solace and encouragement, wisdom and humor during the hardest times of your life. Susan Piver is a best-selling author of The Hard Questions, 100 Essential Questions to Ask Before You Say I Do, and the award-winning How Not to Be Afraid of Your Own Life. A graduate of a Buddhist seminary, she wrote the relationship column for Body and Soul magazine, is a meditation expert and contributor at drweirwild.com, and is a frequent guest on network television, including the Oprah Winfrey Show, Today, and the Tyra Banks Show. Susan, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm very happy to have you here. Now, Susan, I loved your book, and in the introduction you write, quote, when you embrace what you now call sorrow, you will actually find immeasurable authenticity and personal power, the kind you've been searching for all your life. You also write that while you were going through heartbreak, you read a book that brought you to this awareness. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. The book I read was called Shambhala, The Sacred Path of the Warrior, by a Tibetan meditation master named Chogyam Trungpa. And I was so desperate. I was searching for answers everywhere I could. And I picked up this book thinking, what the heck? And I read this paragraph that said something like, the only possible path is your own personal experience, and to be a warrior in this world, you must have a broken heart. The warrior's heart is sad and tender. So that was the first time I ever heard anything that made me think that what I was going through, which just felt so dreadful, could actually lead to something powerful. And so that was the beginning of my quest.
Oh, that is beautiful. You know, you also say, and I love this, you write, quote, heartbreak presents a very important choice. You can either open it to allow it to soften and strengthen you, or you can fight it tooth and nail and turn away from it, which is tantamount to giving it permission to harden your heart. And that's exactly what you were just talking about. It makes so much sense if you can open up and feel. I always say to people, you got to, and my daughter, she's 5 and a half, feel your feelings, feel if you're sad, it's okay. And you're going to come out better on the other side.
I completely agree. And when your heart is broken, just as you point out, there really are only two choices, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Harden your heart or soften it further. And what you say about feel your feelings is so right on. And I read a book by Pema Chodron, an American Buddhist nun, and she added a little addendum to that, which makes it the perfect tip instruction for working with difficult emotion, and that is feel the feelings and drop the story.
Oh.
So that is a potent direction. So you feel what you're feeling in and of itself without making up anything of what it means. This means I'll never love again. This means I'm a loser. This means I should have expected better. No story, just the feeling. That is the most expeditious way to metabolize this pain and turn it into something you can actually use as opposed to something that is just overwhelming you.
Yes, and I think that's hard for a lot of people. Do you have any tips on dropping the story? Because I know that there's so many negative messages that we tell ourselves. Oh, it was my fault, or I should have done this, or I should have known he was doing that, or she should have done, you know, and on, and that just makes the pain even worse, you know.
Yes, it does. And especially right after, for women. Heartbreak is poo-pooed, and it's like, oh, if your heart is broken, that means you did something wrong, or just get over it, you're being hysterical, or a stalker, or whatever, and just get over it. But, so the tip for doing that, and I write about this in the book, is to learn how to meditate.
Yes.
And meditation is commonly misunderstood as emptying the mind of thought. That is wrong, wrong, wrong. You can't empty your mind of thought. That's what it does. It thinks. But you can step back and have a different relationship to your thoughts where you observe them, allow them, but don't get carried away by them. And so you just see them, and then they go away. You see that each thought goes away, by the way, and so does each emotion.
Oh.
So maybe people can use other ways to work with their thoughts, but that's the best way, I think. And that teaches you exactly how to feel what you feel, i.e. be where you are. Lost love is different than other kinds of heartbreak.
Yes, I wanted to bring that up. I'm glad you brought that up. You can. How is it different?
Well, what you mentioned is the big part of it, the freaked out mind. But there's sort of three qualities that you feel, I think, when your heart is broken from lost love that don't seem to come with other kinds of loss. And the first one is shame. You know, devastating shame and low self-esteem and feeling worthless and undesirable. That's very, very painful. It doesn't go with other kinds of hurt, I don't think. And then mood swings that are just ridiculous. Like, you think you're okay, and then you see a squirrel eating an acorn, and you fall apart because you saw a squirrel eating an acorn or something. Something brings it back, like, completely unexpected. And I'm laughing because it's kind of funny, but it's real.
That definitely happens, yes.
And the third one is the one you mentioned, obsessive thinking.
Night
and day. It is so painful. It feels like your own mind has turned against you. Thanks. And heartbreak from love one is creating a relationship with your mind. Because the more you fight it, just like you also mentioned, the worse it gets. But if you can learn to relax, which seems completely impossible, but it isn't, which just relax in this case means allow. Because there's nothing more relaxing than allowing. Allow your thoughts, but don't believe them necessarily. But
yes.
Just watch them like you watch a river. Watch a river washing at night. These are the differences between heartbreak from lost love and other kinds.
Oh, I see. I love that image of the river. I can just see all the negativity, just thoughts, you know, just kind of flowing by. Now, in the book, you talk about the meditation practice called the practice of tranquility, and it sounds like that's what you've been talking about. And whether it's, you know, for myself, and I tend to have what I call monkey mind. My brain goes, like, you know, nonstop, and I've tried to meditate, and I have such a hard time, and then I usually end up giving up. I'm very honest, and I don't want to. I really want to do it. You know, I'm always like, okay, this time I'm going to really do it, and I'm wondering if you have some tips for people like me that just can't seem to get in that space.
Yes, I absolutely do, and the tip is there is no space to get into.
Oh, that's good.
You don't have to be different than you are in any way. The biggest misconception about meditation is that it means emptying the mind of thought, or that it means feeling good or peaceful. It doesn't mean any of those things. It means connecting with who you are in this very moment. So telling your mind not to think would be like opening your eyes and telling them not to see. You know, it's impossible.
Yeah,
so
that's
instead
true.
Of thinking, oh, I'm going to meditate and they all look so peaceful, so I'm supposed to feel peaceful, don't do that. Just sit, watch your thoughts as they are. If you have 100 million, that's okay. Put your primary focus on your breath coming in and out through your nose. When it gets distracted by thought, which it will, and that's okay, this is the key. Gently, with gentleness, without agenda, without expectation, let that thought go and bring your attention back to your breath. And when it happens again, bring it back again. That's the entire practice. And you do not have to feel peaceful, although it happens to make you feel peaceful usually, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you see that you're just wigging out, and okay, you make friends with that. You make friends with that. You invite it. You can make space for it. You are so big. Your mind is so big, and your heart too, that it can accommodate all of this and remain steady.
Oh, that's beautiful. No, I love that. I love to focus on the breathing. It's so important. And, you know, a moment ago when I read that quote, meditation creates a conditioning for transforming pain into wisdom. What does that exactly mean? Like, you're just going to feel wiser about the things that have been bothering you or see things more clearly? I'm picturing as you're letting go of those negative thoughts down the river, you're going to get wiser about yourself. Am I on the right track?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you let go of negative thoughts, but the funny part is you let go of positive thoughts, too.
Oh.
In meditation. You let go of all thoughts.
Oh.
As they arise.
I see.
This thought, that thought, as soon as the thought arises, you let it go and come back, and it doesn't matter if that thought is profound or trite or hateful or powerful or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. You just let it go. So in this way, you learn how to quiet your mind. And a quiet mind, a mind that isn't filled with ideas and thoughts about everything, is able to be present. Present. You can pay attention to what is actually there.
This is so, I'm just so engrossed. This is so fascinating. Now, I mentioned in the introduction that there's some comical bits to your, you know, in your book. And one of the things that cracked me up, the favorite title in your book actually was One Sorry-Ass Bodhisattva Wannabe. And for people who aren't familiar, what is a bodhisattva? And who is the sorry-ass one you're talking about?
Oh, yes, well, sorry-ass one right here raising her hand.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
So a bodhisattva, bodhi means awakened.
Mm-hmm.
And means awakened being. And in Buddhist tradition, and I am a Buddhist, a bodhisattva is one who vows to work for the benefit of all beings.
Oh, that's lovely.
Put others first as much as possible, and to have compassion as your path, basically. And if you believe in things like enlightenment and reincarnation, then a bodhisattva is one who says, I will continue taking reincarnation until all beings are enlightened. It's like a big vow.
Wow. It's really
so
neat.
It's a huge vow.
It sure is.
It's impossible, but you do it anyway, and I did it. So, but having taken that vow, I now see evidence, you know, regularly of how difficult it is for me to be compassionate, especially with my own husband, you know, the person I actually really love. So, you know, it's a continual renewal of that vow every day, you know, marital and bodhisattva.
Oh, yeah. So, that's a pretty high expectation. that does sound very challenging.
What else are you going to do with your life?
Yeah, true. No, I think it's great. I mean, I think you're wonderful.
Fair.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Thing. And, I mean, like, I really encourage everyone to go out there and get your book. So if somebody's listening, again, they haven't meditated before, sounds like the best way to start would be just with some paying attention to your breath. And maybe not maybe just for a few minutes versus, okay, you've got to do 20 minutes three times a day or whatever, you know, starting small. Would you recommend that?
Absolutely. Start small. I have instruction on my website.
Oh, good.
Which is my audio instruction, SusanPodcast.com. It's not so easy to find for some reason. So if anyone goes there and can't find it, my email's there. Just email me and I'll send the link. But otherwise, find a meditation center that is reputable and go there and request instruction. Most of them give it for free.
Oh, that's great.
Like, my lineage is Shambhala Buddhism. There's Shambhala centers in most towns. Zen is a good tradition. Vipassana is a good tradition. You know, anything that's older than 2,500 years.
Okay. Which for coming on. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a great day and keep being healthy.